Hello and welcome to Mastering Education, a podcast all about helping students learn better through interviews with students, experts and educators from GCSE to PhD. We've got you covered. And today I'm delighted to have with me in the studio Tane. Tane is just about to go into year 13, but actually we're not really going to talk too much about year 13 today. In fact, we're going to take him back in time to year 10 and year 11, those dreaded GCSEs. I'm going to talk a little bit about his process, how he got through that period, what he learned along the way, because he did pretty well in them. And hopefully you guys will all learn something from it. If you are watching along on YouTube, please do subscribe to the channel. Please like the video, share it with as many people as you can so that we can try and grow this community. If you're listening along on a podcast streaming service, please follow it so you're updated on when we release another episode. But enough of that, Tane. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, man. So year 13, how does that feel?
Oh, feels like my GCSEs were just yesterday.
Really?
I mean that honestly when I say that. Especially I think today's GCSE results day, by the way. And I think seeing them all open their results on, on BBC News has suddenly taken me way back.
Really?
And I feel like it was literally yesterday that I opened my results.
How did you feel on the day?
I was nervous. I didn't think I was going to be nervous, but yeah, I was. I had my cousin round because I needed someone to distract me. So, you know, I got my most annoying cousin, told him to stay over for the week and he had me distracted. And then...
How old is he?
He's 12. So now
he's at that age.
Right? Yeah. And I remember waking up in the morning, running an ice cold shower. It's at 7:30. Obviously it comes out at 8 with some, you know, some really... big D&B music playing in the
really?
Background.
Okay, yeah. Interesting.
And then locked myself in the study where I did most of my revision for the GCSE. So only felt right to open them in that environment. And my parents sitting in the other room. And I think they were probably, I don't think they even looked me in the eye in the morning when I came down. They were just so nervous. And
did you have like breakfast or something? Did you have
I couldn't even have breakfast. I couldn't eat anything. And I was sitting by my laptop and I waited till 8:02 because I've heard so many stories about people opening at 8 and it glitching because so many people clicked the link. So I'd heard all these rumors. So I waited till 8:02 to open them. And then just as I was going to press the button, my phone pinged and it was an email from school saying, congratulations, we want to interview you. And then I thought, oh, I've nailed them.
Really?
And then I opened my results knowing that they'd definitely gone well if I got that email.
Okay.
And the first thing I saw was the 8 in drama.
Right.
And I thought, oh, please, can I not see another one? And then luckily the rest were all 9s.
All 9s.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, great. So from GCSE then, you decided to go the IB route.
Yes.
We're definitely going to tackle that on a future episode. But just for sort of context, I think, what do you really enjoy about IB and what is maybe something you don't enjoy as much about IB?
Yeah, so I think I'll keep it brief because obviously we've got a future episode to go through it. I think what I most enjoy is the breadth.
Okay.
It's basically 6 subjects. I have to take science and math and English plus some arts subjects. So I get to keep developing all parts of my brain. Mm-hmm. Nice way to put it. And I actually, when I did my GCSEs, I didn't really have any subjects apart from a couple, which I hated. So there weren't any actual subjects I was excited to drop. Mm. So in that case, it was perfect for someone like me who, you know, I consider myself a generalist who likes to do all their subjects. The worst thing about IB is it's just a lot. There's no going around the fact that it's a lot of work and it's meant that I've had to drop so many like social events. I've had to play less sports. And it's kind of sped up my journey into university because it is kind of a bit like university learning in the fact that there's so much independent work you have to do. The extended essay, which is 4,000 words. So
it's like half a dissertation almost.
Yeah, literally. I mean, from that perspective, it's going to be brilliant because when I join university,
it'll all feel easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like you've already done it.
But it does suck because sometimes I just kind of, you know, miss being a 17, 18 year old. And I feel like IB means you have to be really mature because you have to understand that you have to be independent. You can't just rely on being spoon-fed by teachers.
Mm. So, interesting. Okay, cool. Well, yeah, definitely let's tackle that in another episode where we can really go in depth because I know that there'll be a lot of people who might have it offered at their school, but actually don't really know much about it. I think I'm right in saying that A-level is probably more of a kind of generalized path. I think generally most people are swept through into the A-level kind of bracket. So yeah, we'll definitely cover that. So you talked a little bit about your memories of GCSEs. What grade, we've talked about the grades. So you've got all nines, got an 8 in drama, which we won't dwell too much on. And which subjects did you take then? Just take me through.
So I took maths. I didn't take further maths, and I'll come on to the reasoning for that later. Obviously English Lit, Lang, Triple Science, Geography, Drama. And then I took French and Spanish, which was quite rogue at my school. I think I was one of three.
Quite rogue.
Yeah. who took two languages.
So that's interesting. So it's not that normal.
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all.
So what was your choice then behind that?
So I've done French since I was in year three. Mm-hmm. So I was quite confident I was going to get 8 or 9. And that was at the start of year 10. I was quite confident. And then Spanish, I only started in year 7, where I did it for a term, like a taster. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing Spanish full time from year 8. And I just loved it. I just fell in love with the language. And also in the future, I really want to do some work in Latin America and spend some time there. So I thought I can't turn down the opportunity of not learning. And then did it through year 9, got really good grades, mm-hmm. enjoyed it. And then thought, you know, just because people don't do it doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. So actually, yeah, why not take it? And also I suck at art.
Like, right.
Awful. Like, it's so embarrassing, my drawings. There is absolutely no way I was going to take art. And DT, again, there's a drawing element, so I had to steer clear of that. So I was kind of forced into it, but I'm also glad it happened.
Yeah.
So
nice, man. That's cool. Were there any results? I mean, we kind of mentioned the drama thing, but were there any results, good and bad maybe, that surprised you that you got on results there?
Biology. Okay. To those people who took biology, Pearson, at Excel in the same year I did, it was a tough paper. Paper one is usually the paper you pick up marks, and then paper two is the paper I like to call where you try not to lose marks. Paper one was just, I remember coming home and I was like, that did not go well.
Really?
That did not go well.
Was that just because certain topics came up that you weren't prepared for?
Yeah, the first page of paper one, even though I've got my marks back now, I guarantee you I got the first page completely wrong. The first 5 marks on the paper, when I was sitting there, didn't know any of them.
Really?
And there is nothing like sitting in an exam hall and not knowing the first page. And I was like,
confidence was just plummeted.
I was like, oh, it's going to be a long 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it got better. And I didn't only get a 9, but I got a pretty comfortable 9
really?
By about 20 marks.
And do you think part of that might have been grade boundary maybe? Because...
yeah.
You know, obviously if you found it quite tough, everyone probably also found that first page tough.
Yeah, I did. But you know, you always get a mix of people coming out the exam. Some people say, oh, I absolutely smashed that.
Yeah.
And some people are like, I didn't have a clue. And I think that there are a lot of people who said it was quite easy. And that really stressed me out because I was kind of expecting everyone to kind of be like, oh, that was horror. But everyone came out and seemed pretty upbeat. And I was a bit confused. I went straight onto student room. And I was like, what did everyone think?
Onto a student room
okay. where you can discuss how the exams went. I was like, oh, what did everyone think? And everyone was like, it was tough. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. At least it's not just me who found it difficult. Other ones that I found surprising, Spanish and French. So I'm a lot better at Spanish than I am at French, which doesn't make sense because I've done French longer. But I think because I had that passion for Spanish, I generally wanted to mm-hmm. do more revision. So I went into the exams knowing that my Spanish mark was going to be a lot higher than French. And I ended up scraping my 9 in Spanish by 1 mark or 2 marks. And then my French was again by about 10, 15 marks. So it was like, it also made me think about my IB because obviously I had to choose between French and Spanish.
It's, you were only allowed to do one?
You can do two, but it's not advised.
Okay.
So then I was also thinking, well, which one do I take? Because I like Spanish, but clearly I'm not as good as I think I am at it. And I did choose Spanish in the end, and I'm doing that at higher level IB, but that was surprising. I was not expecting that my Spanish was going to be that close to the 9 grade boundary. Mm-hmm. Drama, of course, but drama is a really interesting one. Actually, I'll go into a bit of detail about my mm-hmm. drama. It's a lot of coursework. You know, you've got your acting. For me, my acting was the bit that I was confident about, mm-hmm. and that was the bit I was going to almost get full marks in. In my devising, I got 20 out of 20. And then I fell into the trap, which a lot of people fall into in GCSE drama, of it's not a real subject, I don't need to revise.
Right.
And once I fell down that trap, which was midway through year 10, I didn't put as much work into my coursework. Mm. I didn't take it seriously. And, you know, I prioritized other subjects. And then when my coursework came back and I got the lowest in the class, it was a good moment for me to reflect on, you know, why has this gone wrong? But actually it was quite easy. The reason it had gone wrong is I didn't take the subject seriously and I didn't put enough work into it.
And were you able to, once you heard that result from the coursework, were you able to resubmit it or were you stuck with that grade?
No, it was stuck with that. It wasn't awful. It wasn't awful. It was around 75%, but it did mean that I had to nail my written paper and get near to 100 in axing, which I think I was still confident about. In my written paper, I got 74 out of 80, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a really, really good score. Mm-hmm. And in my acting, all I needed was 30 out of 40. And I was predicted about 37, 38. So I was confident. And I ended up getting 26.
In the acting part?
Yeah, 26. So substantially lower than I thought I was going to get. And I think looking back on it, I'm quite glad it happened. Because I think if I'd got a 9 in drama not taking it seriously, I would have been lucky. And I'm glad that I did get an 8 because I think it taught me the importance of if you don't take a subject seriously, you can't do well in it. So in a way, I'm actually really glad that I got that 8 in drama. And I was only 2 marks off the grade boundary and I considered a remark, but I also thought I actually want to keep this as like something for myself to know that if you don't take a subject seriously,
It will bite you.
It will bite you.
It will come back
so
and bite you.
So actually that is the reason when people ask me, oh, you were 2 marks off, why didn't you get a remark? It's because I kind of like the fact that I can look back whenever I'm struggling in the IB in year 12, year 13 and think, and maybe there's a subject, obviously IB you do 6. And if there's a subject I'm kind of isolating and not doing as much work, I can look back at my drama and think, don't do that.
This is what happens.
Yeah, don't do that.
So it like serves as a reminder to kind of spur you on and kind of work harder. That's interesting. Okay, cool. Sweet. So are GCSEs important? Because I think people who go on beyond GCSE to do A-level or IB or whatever, I think there might be this idea or this sense that, well, the last bit of education you're going to do is that A-level and IB. So that's the most important bit. What are your thoughts on GCSEs as in terms of their importance?
So I get this question a lot, actually, and it surprises me that I get this question a lot because a lot of people ask me, you know, especially family members, younger ones, mm-hmm. like my cousin is, you know, 1 year off doing his GCSEs and he's asking me, how did you revise? And then he often asks me, are GCSEs that important? And the answer is yes. And I think that everyone who asks that question knows that's the answer, but they don't want to accept it. And the reason I say it, and, you know, I am very confident that the answer is yes. And the reason I say this is because when you apply to universities or degree apprenticeships mm-hmm. or whatever you choose to do, you apply with predicted grades. That's the way it's done in the UK. So you apply with grades you were looking at in year 12 or grades you got at the end of the year 12 exam. Now, the issue with predicted grades is that it's very easy for schools to inflate them. And it's very easy for schools to give you grades that you're not actually going to get.
Because they're the ones marking
exactly.
it. And of course they want all their students
exactly.
to, yeah.
And you know, I've so many people at the end of year 12 in different schools, I've heard about them getting 32% in their end of year exam and still being predicted an A star. And you know, it's very common. And the thing is universities know this. So when universities look at an application and they see AAA star, for example, I'll keep it in A-level terms. And they see AAA star, the first thing they'll do is check that candidate's GCSEs. And if the GCSEs are, for example, straight 9s or a majority 9s and 8s, they'll think, oh yeah, that checks out. If your GCSEs are, you know, 6s, 5s, 7s, and then you've got AAA stars, there will always be some doubts in universities. And I'm by no means saying that year 12 predicted doesn't matter. Of course it matters. What I'm saying is when you have strong GCSEs and then strong predicted, you know, it's an unbeatable combo. Mm-hmm. And then universities are thinking, this student has shown talent in year 10 and 11, and then he's done it in year 12.
He's backed it up.
Yeah. And I think it's really important that you treat your GCSEs like an external exam, because they are as important as your A-levels. And I'd actually go as far to say they're more important than your A-levels, because your A-levels, it's three subjects or four, depending on how much you're taking, or I mean five. But the good thing is they're three subjects that you like. They're three subjects you've chosen. And if you like the subjects, you're going to revise for it more. GCSEs is very tough because it's 10 subjects traditionally, and everyone does subjects they don't like, which means that it's a lot tougher to get the top marks because it's so difficult to practice a subject that you don't like. So GCSEs are a really good measure of how smart or how hardworking, how determined you are. Because if you do well in your GCSEs, it shows that you can cope with lots of information. It shows you can cope with time management of 10 subjects. Mm-hmm. It shows that you can manage doing sciences, maths, languages, and then maybe an artsy subject. So I actually think that GCSEs are really, really important. And anyone asking that question should definitely hold themselves back, because I think they know the answer. And I also think that people who do ask that question, sometimes we're a bit nervous about it. And they want someone to tell them that GCSEs aren't important. Yeah. And unfortunately, I wish I could give you that answer.
It's just not.
But it's not true.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Interesting. So let's go back to year 10 and the start of the sort of journey. Was there a big difference? Because obviously you do mocks at the end of year 10,
yeah.
right? How did you feel going through year 10 and going into the mocks? Did you feel that you were in a good place come the end of year 10? Mm. Obviously you ended up in a good place at the end of year 11. So I'm just wondering, was there a big acceleration that happened through year 11, or what was year 10 like?
Year 10 was definitely more serious. And okay. I think I saw that with everyone.
Okay.
I think year 9 is a really fun year because you get to do every subject, and year 9 will always be the year where I messed around the most in class. Like there's no doubt about that. And I think when year 10 starts, everyone is kind of subtly aware that it's important. You're entering a really important 2-year stage. For me, I approached year 10 as if it was my year 11. I revised, paid attention to lessons, made sure I was, any concepts I was struggling with, I was on top of. My year 10 mocks, they were okay. They weren't bad.
Can you remember what they were, what they looked like?
Mainly, our school has a very weird policy of not giving nines in year 10. Eight was the highest you can get. And I think
literally, like if you got 100% on a paper, you think
your
they
grade
wouldn't
at
even
the
give
end
you a 9.
Is still an 8. Yeah. I think it's kind of about, I understand though, because if someone's on straight nines in year 10, it's so easy to take your foot off the pedal and just think I'm going to nail it. So I understand that. My grades were mostly 8s, a 6 in English literature and English language, and a 7 in maths.
Okay.
They're not bad, but it was a bit disheartening to see that the two that I was lacking was maths and English, which are probably the two most important ones that you want to get nines in, especially for A-level and IB courses, but also for universities, because they often have requirements of 7 in English, 7 in maths.
Okay. As a minimum.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was a bit disappointing to see that. And I think the way I dealt with it is I got myself an English tutor in the summer, who actually ended up becoming my French tutor and my Spanish tutor.
Really? So they were like the go-to.
Literally.
They just did everything.
Yeah. She honestly single-handedly got me 3 9s. Eternally grateful.
Nice.
Eternally grateful to her. And the maths was a big block for me. And the maths was really interesting because I've never been bad at maths. Mm-hmm. I've always tended to do really, really well. And what happened in year 10 is something that I'm sure will happen to a lot of people in a lot of different subjects. But mentally, I kept telling myself that I wasn't good at maths. And I kept telling myself, you're not going to get a 9. And I kept telling myself with each homework that I did, this is a really tough homework. Oh, you only got 4 out of 10, what are you going to do? And the thing is, I had such a negative framework for my maths that I basically convinced myself that I couldn't do it.
Really?
And then it's not a surprise in my year 10 mocks, I didn't do it because I walked into the exam thinking—
You were talking yourself
into
being rubbish.
I walked into the exam thinking I'm going to open the first page and I'm not going to know it. And that's literally the mentality I went in. And then when I got the paper back, I sat down with my teacher and he said, what's going on? Because, you know, in year 9, you were getting close to 90% in every test. So something has changed because you're working well in class and you're doing homework. So it's not like you're tailing off. You're not doing badly. And I was telling him, mentally, I just, I, I just, I basically talked myself, as you said, talked myself out of doing well. And we went through the paper with him. It was a really easy paper. And I could not believe I got 47% or 53 or something like that. And I couldn't believe I got that mark. And I was like, it's such a simple paper. And basically what I did from then, and it was something my mum told me, is every time I talked about maths in the house, it has to be positive. So every time I had a difficult maths problem or a difficult maths homework, I would walk in and I'd say to my mum, that was a really fun maths homework.
Even when it wasn't.
Yeah, that was, I really enjoyed it. And I think I did really well. And as soon as I started doing that, by the start of year 11, my marks were 90% straight away. And I didn't get any tutoring. I didn't change any approach. I carried on revising at the same intensity. I started using Maths Genie, which is a website which has like worksheets, which you can do on every topic. But the only thing I changed really was I just only said positive things about it. And it's amazing how powerful that was. And in my GCSEs, it was a very comfortable 9 in maths. I think about 25 marks over. Okay. So you really, when you have a subject that you're struggling with, or a subject you've got like some sort of mental block, just speaking about it positively and just trying to kind of change your attitude towards it. And instead of groaning, say, oh, I've got maths homework today, trying to be a bit more upbeat about it and trying to think, you know what, I'm going to do really well. It changes so much, literally changed my grade from a 7 to a 9 within the space of a month.
So do you think that mindset plays a really important role going into an exam? Like if you go into an exam not feeling 100% confident, like I imagine that's the case, that right, that if you go in there thinking I'm going to be found out, I know I didn't revise this topic enough, I'm sure it's going to come up, and then I'm sure it will come up. And
yeah.
Do you think mindset is a big factor?
Yeah, 100%. And I mean this when I say I walked into every single one of my GCSE exams, and the first thing I did when I sat down at my table is said to myself, I'm going to get a 9 in this paper.
Really?
Literally said that to myself. And the reason I did that is because then I've opened the first page of the paper thinking I'm going to get a 9. Mm-hmm. And when you go in with that attitude, and it's not arrogance, don't confuse it for arrogance, because it's not arrogance. It's giving yourself that confidence. You know, it's kind of that almost self-love a bit. And if you walk into an exam and you sit down and you think, I've not revised for this, it's never going to turn out well. And, you know, there are a few instances. We all know that one kid who says he hasn't revised and then does really well. I'll tell you one thing. He's definitely revising. Yeah. He's definitely revising.
Just playing it cool.
Yeah, he's definitely revising. And even if you're in a position where you're walking to an exam and let's say you've not done as much work, I really urge you to sit down and say, I'm going to do well in this test. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get a 7 or whatever you're aiming for. And say it in your head and even like whisper it to yourself, because it makes such a big difference. And when you're in that exam hall, and I know everyone will agree with me, you're not thinking about your friends. You're not thinking about who's sitting next to you. You know, you're not thinking about what you had for tea last night. You're fully focused on that exam. So when you're in that state to then say to yourself, I'm going to nail this exam, it makes such a big difference, because then suddenly you're in a positive mood and you're ready to tackle it. So mindset is super, super important.
Interesting. Okay, cool. What would you say, I'm going to play sort of devil's advocate a little bit here. What would you say, so let's say we've got someone who does that, right? So they go, oh, okay, I'm struggling, but Tane says I've got to have a really positive mindset. So let's say it's a year 10 mocks. And they say to themselves, right, okay, I'm going to have a really, really positive mindset. I'm going to, you know, whisper grade 9 in my ear. And then they get the result and it's not the grade 9. And they're about to go on a really long summer holiday. What should they do? Like, I think generally, I mean, you sort of experienced it a little bit, as you say, with maths and English with your mock result. But what's the best way of spending academically your summer between year 10 and year 11?
I think the first thing in your summer between year 10 and 11 is enjoy being a 15, 16 year old. Okay. You know, you don't need to put everything on hold.
Okay.
No one needs to do that at all. And I definitely didn't do that. You know, I went on holiday, saw my friends, you know, played a bit of cricket. It was a fun summer. It wasn't a working summer. However, what I would say is, you know, the average person is going to probably wake up around 8 o'clock and go to sleep around 10, 11. You've got a lot of time in the day, and there is no way that you don't have time for at least an hour and a half of just some work and gentle work. I'm not saying that you have to go and, you know, put your earphones in and do a paper. I'm talking about, you know, sitting in the garden, looking over notes, And you know how much work you need to do. If you're on a six and you want a nine, you know, that 1.5 hour maybe needs to be 2 hours a day. And it's not a long time. Break it up. Do 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the afternoon. And what you want to be doing in that summer, I would say, is one of two things. So if you're in a position where you didn't get what you want in your mocks, you want to be looking at that subject and you want to be making notes on the paper. Mm-hmm. You want to be looking at the mistakes you made and trying to do as many of those questions as possible. You want to be trying to look back at all the topics you've learned in year 10 and basically know them like the back of your hand. So when you're going into year 11, you're ready to learn. If you're in a position where you're on a 9 or an 8 and you're feeling pretty confident, what you want to be doing is looking at the topics you're about to start studying in year 11. Try and get ahead. Okay. Start learning, because it makes such a big difference. Because year 11, everyone, I mean, at least my school, I didn't finish the syllabus until about January.
January of year 11.
Yeah, January of year 11.
So there's actually quite a lot of content to cover in that first term. And then you've only got one more term and then it's exam leave, right?
Exactly. So if you spend that summer, and I'm not talking crazy, I'm literally talking 1-2 hours a day, you know, not even on weekends. And you just spend a little time looking ahead at topics, watching a few videos, making a couple of notes. You know, I'm not talking about past papers, just having a look, showing some interest. It puts you in such a much better place, because there's nothing like sitting down in year 11 in your first lesson, the teacher standing up and introducing a topic that you already know. Because then you feel like I'm really going to do well in this year. And, you know, that's what I did. That's what I did in my year 10 summer. That's exactly what I did.
So in terms of, if we were to think, like, I know you've said like sort of an hour or 2 hours a day and not on weekends. So that would about 10 hours a week generally?
Yeah, yeah.
And you would consider that not a lot? Because I'm sure there's some people who might be well, I mean, that's quite a lot.
for me, that was not a lot.
Right.
But maybe that's because I'm in my IB brain right now.
Okay.
And IB is, I mean, we're shooting this episode in the summer and I'm currently doing 4 to 5 hours a day, 5 days a week for my IB. And I would say that's on the lenient side.
Really?
Yeah.
You think you could push yourself harder?
I think I could.
Okay. Why aren't you?
Well, it's an interesting question, because actually last Friday I was doing 5 hours a day and I start my work really early in the morning. I like to do my work from like 7:30 to about 1-ish with a couple of breaks. And then that means in the afternoon, the evening, I can kind of go into town, see my friends and stuff, and like not lose that social life aspect. And last Friday I came downstairs at 7:30 and I just couldn't motivate myself to do any work. And it's a really scary place to be when you just don't want to work. And it kind of shows that you're pushing yourself a little too hard.
Okay.
So I took Friday off, took Saturday, Sunday, and then this week I've reduced my hours massively. And I'm only doing probably 2 or 3.
Really?
And
so you think you overworked in that?
And the reason I'm doing that is because 2 or 3 hours of focused work is the equivalent to 5 hours of unfocused work. And if you come downstairs and you say, I'm going to do 20 minutes of revision and I'm going to be full on focus and I'm going to really put all my attention to it. My phone's not going to be in the room. I'm not going to look at my emails. I'm going to be so switched on. Mm-hmm. Those 20 minutes are way more useful than 4 hours with your phone next to you. Promise you. Like, there is no doubt. And that's what I've been doing this week, because I've been doing not that much. I've only been working half an hour chunks, but I've been saying to myself, you're only in here for half an hour, so make use of it, you know? And that's really, really, really helped me.
And did you, so you've mentioned that that's what you're doing now, obviously, year 12 to year 13 transition summer period. Did you have the same mindset for GCSE? Did you recognize that concept of overworking?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think I was pretty sustainable with my work from GCSEs, and I'll come on to, you know, we'll talk about mocks in year 11 and we'll come on to year 11, but year 10 in particular, I did about as much work as I should have done for the grades that I got, if not on the lesser side.
Okay.
And my school is predominantly a sports school. So actually my biggest fight was with sports, and I think I actually had a cricket game in the middle of my year 10 mocks, which was away as well.
Okay.
So it was like 2 hours on the bus.
So they didn't really help me out.
Didn't really care. I think in that summer, I basically said to myself, year 11 is going to be tough. If you've got the chance now that you're sitting at home, you're on your phone, you're watching TV, why not do an hour of work and make year 11 that bit easier? And it really does add up. Because, I mean, my friends would all tell you, in year 11, I was like so chilled, so chilled. I think from my first exam was on May 15th. From May 15th to June 16th, which was literally the month my exams are in, I must have done 3 hours of work.
Really?
Wouldn't have done more than 3 hours of work.
And that's because you had invested the time earlier on, and you had kind of built the confidence, the mindset. You already felt well prepared, and I'm sure you were focused in lessons, taking good notes.
Exactly.
That's really interesting.
So if you do work in the summer, it's not like you have to maintain that. If you work in the summer, it just means that your next year is a lot easier.
Yeah.
And you know, for me at least, you know, if you just put it into time terms, if you're waking up at 8 o'clock and you're going to sleep at 11, you know, well, it's 15 hours, quick maths there, but I think 15 hours briefly, you know, there is no way that you can't fit in an hour and a half or two hours of work. I mean, it's so doable. And how you do that work is up to you. You know, there's probably going to be people on this podcast, you know, I'm professors and PhD who are going to tell you a certain way of working. I always work with music on, and I've read multiple articles about how bad that is.
Really?
I can't work without music.
Interesting.
So I always have music on my speaker, not with earphones, but just my speaker.
Okay. And like, what's the volume sort of level on that? Is it loud? Is it blaring?
It's not loud. It's kind of, you know, it's not loud, but it's not background noise. Like,
okay.
It's like the radio in the car. That's okay. Kind of volume. And I have to have music.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. And I didn't used to do it in year 9. It was a very new thing. I started in year 10. I started taking my speaker into my room and I'd work with it on. But what I would do is I'd leave my phone outside. So I'd put my phone,
on a playlist.
Shuffle my playlist. Yeah. And then I'd keep my phone outside. Cause I know a lot of you, at least with the iPhone, there's the do not disturb.
Right.
But the issue with do not disturb is when you swipe up, you can see all the notifications anyway.
That you're missing out
on. And then exactly, once you see a notification, you're obviously going to reply to it.
Yeah.
So I would leave my phone outside, and that literally revolutionized my study because I was so focused now. Because then also you're thinking, you know, you don't feel like you're missing out on anything because your phone's not there.
Yeah.
And they were like 9 times out of 10, I'd open my phone. There wouldn't even be anything there. But
sad times.
Yeah, I know, I guess. But it's not like, I guess not having my phone there just meant that there was nothing to check. Like I didn't have anything else to do but work.
Yeah.
Working with music, you know, I used to do past papers with music, which I stopped because I think that wouldn't have been great. Because then obviously when I got into the exam hall, it's not like I've got music playing.
You've just got the sound of people scratching
pens
on paper.
So towards kind of from February onwards, I didn't do any past papers with music. Okay. But when I'm looking over notes, highlighting, reading, I would have music on.
And does, maybe this is a weird question, but would the music change depending on the subject? I don't, is that a thing?
No.
It's just always the same.
It's just always the same. And you know, sometimes it would be radio. Sometimes it would be, you know, I'd have different playlists for kind of different, like my morning music would be very different to obviously my late night music. It'd be constant. There'd always be music on.
Are there any other tips or tricks you kind of evolved or discovered for yourself apart from the music and like no music for past paper, but music or radio for notes and that kind of revision? Were there any other tips and tricks you found that like really worked for you?
One thing which is quite cool, which I've also started continuing now, is sometimes when you get sick of working, change the location that you work in.
Oh, interesting.
Because then it kind of, I don't know why, there's probably some scientific explanation.
Probably because the room feels fresh and the atmosphere, the lighting is different.
Sometimes I do some work in the kitchen, or I do it on the dining table, or I do it in my bedroom, then I do it in the study. I would look in the garden sometimes, read over some notes, and just changing the location, it doesn't feel so monotonous that you keep going into the same room and working. Which is quite useful. Other tips and tricks. I'll have to tell you the push-up story because that's a really good story. So on the night of my first GCSE, which was in fact drama, on the 15th of May, I don't know if I'd seen a video that day or something, but I did 9 push-ups the night before. Literally the last thing I did before I went to sleep, my first day of GCSE, I did 9 push-ups.
Okay.
And the reason I did that is because in my brain, I was trying to kind of engrave that 9 kind of aspect. And I did it the first day. I had my drama and then I came back home and it was biology paper 1 the next day. And I did 9 push-ups again. And then as you say, once you do them, once you do something twice, it becomes a habit. Uh-huh. And every single GCSE the night before, I did 9 push-ups. And I could not tell you why I did that. Like, there wasn't a video I saw. I can't really remember why I had that thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, did 9 push-ups before every GCSE.
Did you get stronger? Like, the first time you did it, were you like, oh, I've got a nice bit tough, but then by the end of GCSE, you're like, hench.
Yeah, the first time I did it, I was like, I was so out of shape. I can't do 9 push-ups without a break. And then by the end, I was like grinding out 9 push-ups and it felt like nothing. And literally, like, my push-up technique as well got so good. And then the issue is, once GCSE is finished, I stopped doing push-ups. And then when I came into year 12, I think we had to do like push-ups in PE or something like that. And then suddenly I was trying to get back into it, but I couldn't get back into it because I'd obviously stopped doing it.
You were like, come on, Tanae, you could do 9. Yeah, like, he's stuck on 7.
Yeah, I know, but it was so strange, and it was a really good ritual that I got into. The last thing I do before I went to sleep, just get literally by my bed and I just do 9 push-ups. And it just mentally, that kind of repetition of the word 9, doing things 9 times. I think that is a big reason of why I got the grades that I did. And it has nothing to do with work, just something that I did. I also left my mock, my year 11 mocks, my like result card, I left it on my bedside table. Okay. So that's the first thing I'd see when I woke up and the last thing I'd see before I go to bed.
And was that was because you weren't overly happy with...
No, my year 11 mocks.
Oh, your year 11?
Year 11.
Oh, did they go well?
I got straight nines.
You got straight nines in those? Oh, interesting. Okay, so from year 10 mocks, end of years, to year 11, there was a huge improvement and it was, you know, maybe a combination of all of those things that we've talked about. So you would wake up and you would see your result card and that made you feel good about your work and inspired. And
And then, you know, I'd walk into school with the swagger of doing 9 push-ups the night before.
Right, yeah.
And it was great. It was a really enjoyable time. It really was my GCSE exams, because I'd done so much work before it that actually the actual exam period, it was like drive into school, I'd have my exam, be 2 hours 15 was my longest one. Then my dad would pick me up, be blasting summer tunes in the car, and we'd be singing. And my dad had a really good way of like, he would know based on my reaction whether to ask about my exam or not. Okay. And he knew me so well that he would like know. And we put it in cricket terms as well. So it's less scary. So he was like, oh, how was the pitch playing today? I was like, oh, there were a few slowies, you know, a few ones that turned past the bat, but there were also a few full tosses, which I was able to just
hit,
you know,
some sixes.
Smack. And obviously for people listening to this, you don't play cricket, that's probably just gibberish. But for me, it helped. And it was just a way of kind of making it all really upbeat, really calm. It really was a fun time.
Picking up then on that, that was interesting. I hadn't really thought about this, but the environment at home, that obviously you can create an environment at home sort of for yourself in your own private space, of course, which is probably your bedroom. How important do you think it is to have a really good environment and maybe like a network of people around you, whether it's friends, families, siblings? Like, is that, do you think people should like have a conversation with their parents or something and be like, look, it's exam season. This is what I need from you. Should people do that?
100%.
Really?
Exactly that. This message is actually more for parents. So if you're a kid listening to this, you know, call your parents over, because I need to say this. Your child knows exactly what they're expecting from their GCSEs. They know how much work they've done. They know how they're going to react. They probably know what they're going to feel at the end of each exam before they've done it. So please ask your child what they expect of you, because there's nothing worse than, for example, someone who's had a bad exam and then your mum and dad is badgering your phone. How did it go? How did it go? Call me. And you come home and people are like, oh, how did it go? Tell me, was there a tough question? Should I search up the answers? You need to find the balance. Mm-hmm. And that is a very personal thing. For me, I told my parents that if I want to talk about an exam, I will talk about it. And if I don't, it's probably because I don't want to talk about it. Okay. And I was really open.
And they respected
and
that.
They respected that. And they, and you know, they were really like, okay, that's fair. And there'd be times where I'd come home, for example, after biology paper one, you know, for about 3 hours, I didn't really want to talk about it. And then I kind of reflected and I was like, oh yeah, it wasn't great. And we will open up about it. Mm. Of course we want to tell you, you're our parents, but don't pressurize us, because we've got enough pressure. You know, the GCSEs are really stressful. Mm. And then to have that added pressure from home, you know, don't don't do that to your child, because it's not a nice place to feel. And sometimes you don't feel that unconditional love. You know, not that I'm emotionally blackmailing any parents right now, but sometimes when you come home, you never want, a child should never feel nervous to tell their parents that the exam's not gone well.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're too often the parents, you know, try to live through the exam period through their children. And they're like, oh, how did it go? How did it go? How did it go? And like, that's not what you need. And, you know, I don't think there's any child who wants that. Mm. You know, any 16-year-old who wants to come back after a really, really bad exam where they just didn't know what was going on. And we've all had that exam, like I did in that maths where I got 40 whatever percent. And it's not fun having your parents like constantly badgering you. So I really think it should be an open conversation. Maybe a week before the GCSE start, just sit down and say, what do you expect from us? And I think, you know, we'll be really honest. Mm. And we'll say, you know, mum, dad, when I come home, I think when I come home, I'm just going to go for a nap for half an hour. And then when I wake up, I'll tell you how it went. Or mum, dad, actually, I want you guys to ask me how it is. Okay. I want you guys to ask me how it went. I want you guys to give me some energy that I can bounce off. And everyone will have a different way of dealing with it. But don't, just because you deal with something a certain way doesn't mean you have to force that onto your child. Mm-hmm. Just because you're super energetic doesn't mean, you know, you need your child to be bouncing off the walls. It doesn't need to be like that at all.
Interesting. Cool, man. What would you say to someone who is, they've done their year 11 mocks. Okay, so some schools do mocks in November, and then they do another set of mocks in February. Some schools just do one set of mocks in December and then they're done. And then your school does it in January and done. You don't do any more mocks after that, right?
So we do in November and January.
Oh, you do November and January. Yeah. Sorry, right. Okay, cool. What would you say to someone who's got their results back? This is their year 11 mocks and they've not gone well. So let's say we're in January or whatever, and they're looking at it and they go, right, I've got 5 months. I've got 5 months to kind of turn this around. What would you say to them? Like, what are some steps that they could do maybe?
I think the most important thing is reflection.
Okay.
It can be really easy to kind of, you know, do your mocks, get your marks, and then think right straight onto exams. You really need to assess what went wrong.
Okay.
And I think talking to teachers after your year 11 mocks is really important, because teachers know you best.
Okay.
And also teachers have taught hundreds, you know, thousands even for long-term teachers, long-term, you know, teachers who have done it for a long time. They will have seen people in your position and they will be able to give advice. I think it's a good moment for people to have if the year 11's mocks don't go well, because it kind of, that means, you know, it's time to step on the gas. It's time to like, you know, start making some sacrifices, especially, you know, this is only if you want to do, you know, some people, maybe six is a fine and that's not an issue.
Mm.
But you know, for those of you who are kind of, it's not gone well in the year 11 mocks, but you still want to get that nine, you know, the first thing that means is you need to work hard now.
Okay.
You need to switch on. And that's not like an aggressive way, like you haven't been switched on, but this is like, it's almost a call to say, this is it now. Okay. You've got 5 months, make use of it. I don't even think it's 5 months, but you know, make use of it and talk to your teachers and, you know, be really open with them and say, I've got, you know, five or six in this. I want to get a nine. I think I can get a nine. How do I do it? And your teachers will definitely give you advice.
Let's say they don't. Okay. So let's say you're someone where they feel really alone.
Yeah.
They're big, big class size. The teacher is very inaccessible.
Okay.
What then? What if they feel alone and it's all up to them and they feel the weight of their world on the shoulders?
I would say first things first, take a deep breath, because you won't be the first person in this position.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I would say is look at all the mistakes you made in the mock and mark them, whether they're silly mistakes or whether they're mistakes because you didn't know it. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one's better, because silly mistakes are pretty frustrating. You know, there's nothing worse than doing like a 7-mark maths question and realizing you got 5 + 2 wrong at the start and then you've lost all the marks for that question. But at least it means that you know it. And it just probably means you need to probably slow down in the exam. You need to take a deep breath before doing each question, or maybe each time you turn a page, say to yourself, I'm going to take 3 seconds to calm myself down, then do it. And that should cut out silly mistakes. If it's lack of understanding, unfortunately, it either means that you've not worked hard enough at that point, or it means that maybe there are certain topics which you're really struggling to get your head around, which is where I look at maybe asking a teacher or even asking a friend who's really good at it. I had a friend who was really, really good at geography. Shout out to Fred. And he was always get the highest score in the class, and I would never know why. And he would write for like the 9 mark, or like, I can't remember how many marks it was now, but like the 4 mark questions, he'd write like 4 sentences. I'd write half a page and I'd have 2 out of 4, and he'd have 4 out of 4.
Okay.
And I was like, how is this kid writing like 50 words
yeah.
and getting the 4 marks? And what I did, I literally just sent him a message. I was like, mate, can you send me your paper? Look through his paper, straight away picked out what I was going wrong.
Really?
And I knew. So I just, you know, you will always have some kid in your class who is doing really well.
Okay.
So ask for their paper.
Okay, cool. Great.
Because it's so good to learn from someone your age, because if their paper is phenomenal, you can just ask them, how did you get to that stage? What are you doing? Mm. And maybe they reveal to you something that you didn't know was, you know, you had never thought about it like that. And that's really useful.
Interesting. Okay, cool. How important are past papers?
Very.
Why?
Very. Most important thing. Why? Past papers are so important. So past papers are an interesting one, because I think people leave them too late.
Start adding into their revision. Yeah. Okay.
I think I probably started looking at past papers in December. Okay. So before the year 11 mocks. And by the time I got to April, which was a month before the GCSE started, I'd done pretty much all the past papers available for all my subjects. Mm-hmm. And then I started redoing past papers and only doing the questions I'd got wrong the first time.
Okay.
And one thing you can also do, which I did for chemistry and biology, is I actually sat with the past paper open on my iPad, and I got my mum to sit opposite me. And so question one would, you know, be a question on like planets or something. And I would give the answer, and she would just look at the mark scheme, and she would tell me if I've hit the points, because you don't need someone amazing, but you know, you don't need a physics teacher to do it with you. And all I told her was, can you just make sure that I've mentioned all of the marking points?
Okay.
And she did that for me like religiously from the start of year 11. And I think we did it in geography as well. And she would just sit there and she would tell me, you got 1 out of 3 marking points, or you mentioned all the marking points. Cause often there are keywords which pick you up marks.
Okay.
So I basically told her, if I don't get one of those words, just let me know. And then I would write it down and I'd say, you forgot to say X for this question. And then I had a bunch of notes on all the mistakes I'd made. And then they're the notes I looked at the night before the exam. That's what I would look at. And also the good thing about doing papers orally is we were doing like 3-4 past papers in one sitting. It'd be, you know, super easy. She would just sit there, I would say the answers, and we would get through a past paper in about 20 minutes when obviously papers are 2 hours. Mm. But it just meant that I could get through more papers quicker.
And I suppose in doing that as well, you're getting used to the layout of the paper.
Yeah, exactly.
You can almost like close your eyes and visualize.
Exactly.
What
the paper looks like. I could by the time the exam started. And you know, it may be your mum, it may be your dad, maybe your friends, you know, brother, sister, but having someone to do papers with you orally is very underrated. Okay. And I don't see it a lot.
Yeah, because I imagine most people are like, well, I'm going to be writing in the exam. Yeah. I should do a written paper.
And I think that's true, but I think and I'm not saying you shouldn't write. You definitely should write at least 5 past papers for each subject. But, you know, you're not going to forget to write on the day of the exam. You'll know how to do it. Mm. And most of GCSEs, apart from drama, there's not much time pressure. So you don't need to worry about it too much. So having someone to do it with you orally, you're going to get through double the amount of past papers, even triple in the same amount of time. And then it also opens you up to do revision in other places. So it's a great tip if you're really behind.
Okay.
So if you're, you know, your question about year 11 mocks didn't go well, and you've obviously not got that much time, past papers orally is definitely what I'd suggest.
And I suppose with that as well, you don't technically need someone there with you in theory, because I know you were saying orally there's a conversation there, but I mean, you can literally almost like, it's almost like a flashcard, have a look at the question, maybe from the mark and have the mark scheme next to you and say, right, I think this is going to be the answer and this is going to be the answer.
Yeah.
And then look at the mark scheme.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, great. I got it right.
Yeah. What's it called?
It's like a speed test or something.
Like in, what was it in like year three, year four spelling, the look, cover, write, check or whatever you used to do, where you look at the answer and then you look at the spelling 10 words and you try and spell it. Then you check, then you cover it and you'd write it again. It's literally like that.
Okay.
Literally
a more advanced, yeah, grown
exactly.
up thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just so quick to do. And in terms of like time saving techniques, this is the best one.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. Cool. Nice, man. How important is diet, nutrition? Was that anything that kind of came into your mind during that sort of revision period and also the exam period as well?
So for the exam period, I think people have, you know, a bit like stress eating, I guess. Okay. And there are a lot of times where, you know, everyone knows, for example, my drama exam was in the afternoon. So it was at 1 o'clock and school lunch is served at 12:30. And I remember having, I think it was a roast dinner that day. And as soon as we got to 45 minutes in the drama exam, like I just crashed. And people think, oh, it doesn't really matter. It really does matter because I literally crashed in the middle of the drama exam and suddenly I just felt really tired and sluggish and slow.
Was this the written paper or physical?
The written.
Okay, cool.
And that's awful place to be in because drama is a really time pressured subject. Mm. So, you know, you don't want to be slow. So one thing I would say about diet and nutrition is I really would urge you to have breakfast that make you feel like you have enough energy for the exam, you know, kind of yogurts, oats. You don't want to be having things like a bacon bap, which obviously feels amazing before it, but you're going to crash in the middle of the exam, which is not great. And I know this all seems like really nitty gritty.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, if you know the subject, doesn't matter what you eat. Little things like this buy you 3 or 4 marks there when you're a bit more up to speed, you know, one multiple choice, you're really quick on, and that saves you 10 seconds and then you can move on. So these are the little differences between, totally. You know, 8 and 9, 6 and 7. Yeah. So I was home cooking all my meals during GCSEs. For me, cooking is like a way of relaxing. So anyway, I used to do that. And I was cooking, like trying to cook, you know, pastas, lots of vegetables, salads. I was trying to avoid like any oily food because the thing is, once you have oily food, you just kind of like, you feel sleepy and you don't want to revise. And then, you know, you just want to...
Because it's harder to digest or something like that, right? Actually you want something that the body will really easily break down and doesn't require a huge amount to get through.
Yeah. So it's important.
Simple definitely foods, important. Basically. It's funny when you were saying that, I suddenly remembered when I was doing my GCSEs, my mum had obviously read something somewhere about like supplements to take. And she sent me, because I was at boarding school, and she sent me a box full of stuff with like a schedule of what I needed to take, when, how I needed to do it, how much of it. So there was some stuff that I had to put on my pillow, like a liquid thing to like help me sleep and have a really restorative sleep. There was, I think she made me have like omega-3 tablets. There was literally this box of tablets, which I think I remember she checked up on me once and was like, are you taking the tablets? Because they were really expensive. And I think they were like, there was some probably woo-woo science about it improving your brain speed and brain function. And she was like, you've got to take the brain function tablets, you know? And I did fairly well in my GCSEs, so maybe that was it. I don't know. But I mean, like you were saying, it's 3 or 4 marks here and there, maybe. But that's worth
it. That is so funny. I mean, parents, you know, that is the most parent thing I've ever
heard. I know.
I still remember going into my first day of GCSEs and my dad dropped me in the car and his advice to me before I went in was make sure your handwriting is neat enough for the examiner to read.
I mean, that's a really good note.
It's a really good piece of advice, but it was just like, it's one of those moments, like if there was ever a more dad piece of advice you could be given. And I asked all my friends, and all my friends for some reason that day had been dropped by their dads, and they all had the exact same thing. They're like, do you know, my dad told me to write neatly. How old is that? I've never thought about that. And it was like really funny because then I was in my drama exam. And I was, oh God, that T doesn't look like a T. That
dad wouldn't be happy.
and it really got into my head about it. But also that is actually a great tip, because because everyone knows that one kid who you could just not read his handwriting, and the teachers hate him because the teachers have to sit there for like half an hour deciphering this Norse code that he's written, and they're not able to do it. So yeah, you know, neat handwriting is
cool.
Important.
Here's a question that I think is quite important and maybe relevant for quite a lot of people. How do you, it's a sort of revision kind of thing. How do you prepare for a subject that you just literally hate, that you have, we talked earlier about how GCSE is such a broad range of topics that you're never going to enjoy every single topic you do. How can you prepare for a subject that you just hate? You've got no motivation to do it. You don't enjoy it. There's like, you can't even find anything that you like about it. How are you supposed to prepare for that?
Yeah, there is no one. I mean, I'd love to know. Let me know in the comments if you love every single one of your 10 subjects. Yeah. But for me, that was physics, biology. I'm going to start listing them off here and annoy my teachers.
It was everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, English was actually, let's put English right at the top. Okay. English literature and English language, I hated it.
Least
Shakespeare, oh my God. Shakespeare has given me sleepless nights.
Okay.
I mean, there are so many times I would just look like a page of Shakespeare and I just wouldn't know what it meant. Mm-hmm. Just wouldn't know. And, you know, I know you're probably all expecting me to give like some sort of secret tip there, but I think the real advice is just, you've got to get over it.
You've got to get through it.
You've just got to do it. You've just got to treat it like, you need to tell yourself it's important, of course. Mm-hmm. You can't treat it like, I don't like this subject, so I'm not going to revise it. You really need to put time, because, you know, you don't want a drama happening on you like happened with me. You need to, you know, keep persisting. It's going to be tough, but the thing is, it's there. Everyone has that one subject, so you're all in it together a bit, which is useful.
You just got to get through it.
Yeah,
just get through it.
There was not one boy in my English class that liked English, so it really helped me that I knew everyone else was struggling through it, so it wasn't just me.
You didn't feel alone.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Okay, so we've gone through the whole journey. We've talked about year 10, we've talked about the mocks, year 10, we've also talked about year 11, we talked about that summer period. Let's put ourselves in the headspace. We've done the GCSEs. How do you get over that waiting period? You know, like, how did you feel waiting for the results? I'm imagining you are playing through your mind as it gets closer to the results day, you're playing through your mind, oh, well, I'm probably expecting that because that didn't go well. And you're almost like reliving and dragging up the memory of maybe a particular paper that didn't go well. How can you best get over that?
It's really tough. It's really, really tough because, you know, all you can think about when you finish your GCSEs is, oh, I finished my GCSEs. Within 2 days, that turns into, I've got to open my results. Like, how am I going to muster the courage to do that? Because it really does feel like 2 years of hard work and, you know, it doesn't turn out great for everyone. People, you know, do a lot of work and unfortunately it doesn't turn out well for them.
Sure.
And you know, the one thing I would say is it's always good to sit down and do like a worst case scenario, with your parents. So for example, for me, that was, I wanted to do high level maths IB. I needed a 9, I think, to do that. So if I got an 8, I would say, okay, I have to take standard level maths. So that means I'll probably have to take high level geography, because obviously there are subject requirements. So that was important. I want to say don't think about it, but it's not that easy.
It's impossible, isn't it? I suppose you could do things to distract yourself.
Yeah.
You could be like, right, I'm really getting in a bit of a downward spiral here, just constantly thinking about this thing.
Exactly.
I'm just going to go outside, or I'm going to meet up with my friend.
Yeah.
I just need to get out of the house and do something.
Yeah, and that's something that that's literally the reason I invited my annoying cousin over. Like, literally, I just needed someone to just really take my mind off it. Mm-hmm. And I remember the night before my GCSE results, we stayed up till about 1 a.m. And I got stressed when I saw him get nervous for me.
Okay.
He started going quiet when we, you know, got to the results day. It was about 1 a.m. We were still up. I think we were playing FIFA or something. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing him tense up. And when I came down in the morning, he was sitting there on his phone. And poor guy looked so nervous to me.
Really? Because he had like he'd lived through it with you,
and
right?
I was an older cousin, so you know, it's always going to be, we always have that banter. And when I saw him nervous, I was like, oh God, this is a big deal. Because then also I didn't want to let him down. Like, it would have been such a, you know, we had such a great week together doing lots of activities. I didn't then want to, you know, mess up my GCSEs. And I also wanted him to see what a successful GCSE looks like to give him the motivation. And when I came downstairs, I looked at him. He couldn't look me in the eye. And he was suddenly, there were no inside jokes. There was no banter.
It was game day.
You know, he was, you know, and that really scared me a bit. And I was like, oh God, even he's, you know, rooting for me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the one piece of advice is come up with your plans, because that's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I would say is, like you said, just distract yourself, try and get on with your summer. It gets harder the closer you get to it. And you know, it's always a weird thing where you book the holiday. I remember we had that conversation. Do we book the holiday after the results day? But then what if the results are bad? So do we book the holiday before the results day? I think I opted to not go on holiday that summer because I didn't want to, because I just, you know, it was so stressed about everything that my parents actually went without me. And I stayed at home, just because I was just too, I think I was just too nervous. And I also didn't want to celebrate too much and have too much fun, because I felt that I'd then be guilty if the results didn't go well, which it shouldn't be by any means. And that's probably like a mistake in my reasoning. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the one thing I would say is it's going to be tough for every single 16-year-old out there. So it's so easy to talk to your friends about, because everyone does GCSEs.
So just talk about it.
Yeah, literally, just talk about it. You don't have to kind of just sit there in your room thinking, what if it doesn't go to plan? It's as simple as a message to a mate going, God, I'm struggling with my GCSEs. Yeah. What are you thinking about? And they'll probably reply with GCSEs too. And then you've suddenly got someone to kind of share the burden with you. So that's really useful.
So sort of don't hold it inside and just like talk to someone.
And actually on that point, speaking about friends, I often, you know, I go to a boys' school. So I don't know if it's a different experience at co-ed or a girls' school, but it can be really frustrating coming out of an exam and having people jumping up and down and asking you, what was the answer to question two? What was the answer to question two? And you know, everyone in the group says 45, for example, and you're sitting there with the answer of 12 thinking, oh, I've obviously got that one wrong. I would just say, be courteous to other people, because sometimes it can be really easy to get into that, I'm a straight nine student and whatever I've put as my answer is correct. And it's not nice to go and ask people what they got for a certain question, because a lot of people ask the questions that they know they got right. Mm. So like, what did you get for question 10? And then I'll say, for example, 10, and they'll say, oh, that's wrong, because I got 11. So, you know, you shouldn't do that, because it messes with other people's psychology. And then that person might go home and think, oh, I failed this exam. Mm. And in the end of the day, he might've been right and you might've been wrong. So just be aware that other people are all, you know, you want everyone to do well. It shouldn't be like I'm glad he's there because he's going to lower the grade boundary. It really shouldn't be that. You've got to support each other. When I did my GCSEs, I had a group of friends and we would go and play, we'd go and play soft hands in the cricket nets after every exam religiously. So we'd finish the exam and I wouldn't bother waiting for them outside. I'd walk straight to the nets and I know that they would be, they'd be there to kind of, you know, to play around. And we would talk about the exam a little bit, but we wouldn't do it in a way that made anyone feel like they'd got something wrong. So we try and avoid specific questions. And if, let's say you are that person who is kind of seen as a bit smarter than everyone else, sometimes when someone asks you, what's the answer to this question? Just say, I don't know. I can't remember, because actually it makes you feel a bit better, because then you're not suddenly putting yourself out there and everyone's trusting that you've got the right answer. But it also makes the other person feel a bit like, okay, it doesn't matter. We don't need to worry about the answer. So just kind of, I go in with that mindset because you really need to support each other. Mm. And you know, if those boys we hadn't gone to the nets after every exam, I don't know what I would have ended up doing, waiting for my dad to pick me up a couple of times. Like,
and then getting in your head.
Yeah, and then suddenly, you know, you've walked out an exam feeling really positive, but someone said that question two was four and you didn't get that. And then suddenly you think, oh, the whole exam was a waste. So, you know, that my friend group then like helped me really well. And it was amazing because everyone in my friend group got what they wanted from the exams, which was really cool. So that's good.
Final question. This is a really broad sort of general one. Just sort of something that came to mind when I was thinking about what we might talk about. Which teacher has like sort of most inspired you, or which teacher has kind of... I don't know, maybe like made you feel differently about a topic and why? Like, who's been most influential to you?
So I'm going to go for two.
Okay.
My first one is my maths teacher, Mr. De Planka. And the reason I've chosen him is actually not for his maths.
Okay.
When I got my drama GCSE coursework back, And I was obviously really disappointed. The next lesson I had was maths, and I turned up to maths, and within the first 10 seconds of me turning up to lesson, he knew something was wrong. And he literally sat next to me in the maths exam and gave me like a live therapy session.
Okay.
And he said to me, you know, what went wrong? I told him what happened in drama, and he gave me a plan of action, and he said how I'm going to get back at it. He himself had done GCSE drama, so he gave me a few tips about the acting. And he basically calmed me down when I was probably like really close to spiraling after that score. And it wasn't even his subject. Like, he didn't need to take interest in me.
Yeah.
He had a class of 20 boys. And within 10 seconds, he knew something was wrong. And he was like, he literally sat next to me and he was like, okay, talk to me. And for 10 minutes in the middle of the class, he just talked to me, and everyone else was getting on with whatever maths they were doing. And I just like made me feel really valued. And it also made me feel a lot more positive about drama, but it also made me feel like the teachers care about you individually. Mm. Like, they're not just thinking about, I just want to get as much nines and get it on my record. They actually care about the individual student. So it's also a really emotional time for teachers. Today when I was watching the BBC News and I was seeing like all the students open their letters, I could see the teachers in the background looking so nervous, because obviously, you know, these teachers,
they invest a lot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know, they put so much into it. And it's not at all about wanting their class to, you know, all get nines. It's about the individual student, the relationships they have with them. And you think, oh, I really hope it works out for that guy. I really hope it works out for that girl. And it's a different, that teacher-student relationship when you've got a teacher who likes you and someone that you trust is really, really strong.
Very valuable.
The second one, I'm actually not going to choose a teacher. I'm going to say my mum, because my mum, she's got 9 degrees.
So what?
Yeah, she knows what she's talking about.
Okay. And
she's done a lot.
So I know who the next guest is on this podcast.
she does a lot of education.
Okay, cool.
And she trains doctors across the UK. And she, you know, when you've got someone like that who is like insanely good at studying, mm-hmm. who's got, you know, 9 degrees takes, you know, number one, the time, and then number two, the determination to keep going. And she literally was like always there for me when I have an exam. And also if there were any subjects I struggled with, she'd always offer help. I think at one point she tried to help me with Spanish. She's never even spoke Spanish before, right. But she made the effort to like try and like struggle through like marking my spellings or whatever. And it's also really useful. I know not everyone has the same opportunity, but to have someone who's, you know, got a master's in kind of education based mm-hmm. Degrees and someone who trains doctors for an exam. She had so many like little insights and like exam tricks that, you know, I've obviously, you know, shared the secrets now on this podcast, but that were really, really cool to have. And when you've got someone who loves studying like she does, I will say, you know, there were times that I would like actually say, Mum, can you just highlight the keywords on this piece of paper? And because she likes studying so much, she actually would do it for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I probably wouldn't have got the results. Like, no doubt would not have got the results if like Shen had that like excitement for me, cool. Which is quite cool.
Great.
Yeah.
Sweet, man. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't feel like there's anything we've missed out. We've kind of really gone through in detail everything from year 10 to year 11. We've talked about those key moments, things like mocks. We've talked about, diet and nutrition. We've talked about music on or off as you revise. Is there anything else that you think should people listening, again, if we sort of imagine someone in year 10 or maybe someone in year 11 going through the sort of GCSE period, is there anything else you think that you would want to say to them?
Probably just worth a note on the year 11 mocks. Okay. I don't think we talked about it explicitly, but I would just mention that the mocks are there to help you find out which areas of each subject you need to study more. And in the, you know, people say, do I need to revise for the year 11 mocks? I would revise for the year 11 mocks exactly how you would revise if they were the real thing. Mm-hmm. You know, treat them like the real thing. Because the reason you should do that is if you treat them like the real thing and you come out with a 9 in biology, you know that you're in a good place. But if you treat them like the real thing, come out with a 6 in biology, you know, okay, there's clearly work to be done. But if you go into it half-hearted, you put in about half the amount of revision, you've got a bunch of results which mean nothing because you've not put your full effort into it.
It's not a good benchmark.
Exactly.
It's not a fair benchmark.
So you don't even know where you are. So your year 11 mocks are super important. And then I think the other thing is just try and enjoy the whole process. You know, at the end of the day, you're a 15, 16 year old. So like have fun. Mm. yes, it's going to be a time where a lot is riding on it in terms of your future. And, you know, there's no need to hide from that. And you shouldn't feel coy about saying stuff like that. You should be pretty open that, you know, these GCSEs are really important. But the good thing about GCSEs, which you don't always get with IB and A-level, is that everyone's in the same boat. Every single 15, 16 year old in the UK is in the same boat. So enjoy kind of going through, you know, the trenches together, as I'd say. You know, enjoy that kind of late night maths chat with your friend, or that one friend who puts a message in the chat saying he's found the paper. You know, yeah. Just enjoy those moments, because you'll look back on it. And I mean, I haven't gone to university yet, but I can't imagine it's this fun at university. But there is some really fun elements to GCSEs. And if you work hard, it's really fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for going through all of that, sharing your journey. What a journey as well. Like, particularly when you were saying about how you did quite badly in like the year 10 mocks.
Yeah.
I think that was really interesting. And I hope everyone listening as well or watching found it really, really helpful. You are going to come back, which I'm super excited about.
Definitely.
And when you do come back, we are going to be focusing more on year 12 and year 13. I know that you also really want to talk about IB as well. So
Yes. We
will definitely do another episode where we sort of delve into life beyond GCSE. And I would definitely obviously encourage everyone to kind of tune into that regardless. I think also it'd probably be interesting to listen to, even if you aren't even in year 12, 13 yet. Because I imagine you want to be making decisions about those things in year 11 at some point, right?
Yeah, I would say that. I would say in year 11, you want to have a pretty good idea of what you're going to do. And that doesn't mean, I'm not talking about university course or anything like that. I'm talking about just the subjects that you're going to do in year 12. Yeah. But I also think it's a decision that comes very naturally to people. People know kind of which subjects they've enjoyed more. Mm-hmm. It's really natural. You know, for me, I definitely wanted to continue Spanish. And then I knew that I didn't have the chance to study economics, but I wanted to do economics. Mm. So I think you'll be surprised if you sat down at any point during year 11 and someone said to you, write down three or four subjects, you'll be able to do it pretty quickly.
Okay.
I would say.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks again. And thank you everyone for watching, following along, listening, wherever you might be. Please do, if you're watching it on YouTube, please do subscribe to the channel. Please do like the video. Please share it with as many people as you can, because I think genuinely myself, Tane, this isn't for us. We're not, you know, it's, we're not having a good time reminiscing on the old times of what GCSEs were like. I think both you and I are coming from a perspective where this is all about trying to give good quality advice from someone who's been there to young people, right?
Yeah. And I also think that if you're listening to this podcast, you're clearly taking things seriously. Yeah. So I think that's a really good step that you're here at the end of the episode, because I think it already shows that your mindset is switched on, which is a good place to be.
And so also share that. If you took something away from the podcast today, share it with someone else. Share it with someone else you think. I mean, you talked about how important friends are in this period. So look after your friends. And if you did find it helpful, which I can't imagine why you wouldn't, obviously, as you said earlier, leave a comment in the comment section. We might just get hate, but I hope not. But do leave a comment. If there is something that you do want us to talk about, we will. And I think I will certainly keep on top of the comments. I'm sure you would as well.
Yeah, happily.
I'm going to put an email address as well. There is a Mastering Education email address, which I'll put into the description on the video. I might be able to do it on Spotify as well, but I think it'd be really interesting. I would like to invite anyone to ask any questions, because I think it'd be nice to have a discussion where if there was something maybe we didn't cover or anything like that you do want us to go through, just let us know on that Mastering Education email address and we'll go through it. It might be interesting to kind of have, you know, some questions that if you want to put your name or whatever, fine. Or if you want to be anonymous, great. But it'd be kind of interesting to have that interaction with the audience. Hopefully, you know, if people do, the offer is there. The offer is there to 100%. Talk to us if you want. But anyway, thank you so much for listening, guys. Please do tune into the next one. I'm sure it'll be super informative again. And thank you very much. And see ya.
Thanks, guys.